The last article I'm going to read before taking another musical break is another op-ed column, this from the San Jose Mercury News of Wednesday, March 3rd of 1993. This column is by Alan Lupo, a Boston Globe columnist. It's headlined, "Will We Give Up Our Freedom When the Lights Go Out?" It's skipping down in this particular article. There is discussion of this column, I should say. There's discussion of a fellow named Tony Scotti, S-C-O-T-T-I, an American security consultant. And skipping down in the column, Scotty's observations are reiterated by Alan Lupo as follows. Scotty's point, on which most counterterrorism and security experts agree, is that Americans will not put up with the kind of restrictions necessary to minimize the danger of car bomb explosions. But those who have been threatened regularly with the sort of incident that rocked the World Trade Center will limit their freedom of movement in the interests of survival. Quote, "We in the U.S. can't even begin to understand the freedoms we have," unquote, Scotty says. Quote, again quoting, "Until we walk through a shopping mall and see people with shotguns and machine guns," unquote. Well, it remains to be determined whether the American people will, in fact, give up their freedom, and it remains to be determined whether or not the World Trade Center bombing is an isolated incident, or whether this turns out to be part of a pattern, whether it is a pattern that manifests itself primarily abroad, which is what has happened so far, or whether we see other terrorist incidents happening here in the United States. I would bear in mind that there is an as-yet unsolved firebombing of the wife of the skipper of the USS Vincennes, the ship that shot down the Iranian Airbus in 1988. That shooting down, by the way, was discussed, again, in the miscellaneous archive show Election 88. So it remains to be seen whether the, quote, international terrorism, unquote, that we've seen so much of in the past two decades, whether that comes home in a big, big way, or whether the World Trade Center remains an isolated incident. But it's certainly something to observe, and I suspect that whether or not the World Trade Center turns out to be an isolated incident, that there is much, much more to it than what we have been told so far. While bombs have been going off all over the world, in Bombay, in Cairo, right here in the USA, and as we have been treated to the prospect of having to face what so many other countries have faced, namely a wave of terrorism here at home, at the very same time as this has been going on, another incident which also tends to propel the public in the direction of wanting greater police powers, broader surveillance powers, fewer civil liberties here at home in order to protect against this kind of thing. Another thing has happened at the very same time, namely the bloody standoff down in Waco, Texas, between law enforcement, chiefly agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and the Branch Davidian cult headed up by David Koresh. There is an awful lot more, a great deal more investigating to be done vis-a-vis the Branch Davidians than has been done so far. It's a lot of information that needs to be unearthed, but there are a number of things that make me very suspicious about this particular group. In particular, I'd like to know where their money comes from. They've gotten a lot of money. And I would note, too, that having things like the standoff in Waco go down and the World Trade Center go down, these incidents tend to weaken Bill Clinton's image in the eyes of the general public. And once again, simply sound out the people you are in contact with at work or wherever. Things along the lines of what is happening in Waco, things along the lines of what happened at the World Trade Center, tend to make the person on whose watch this occurred look weak, inept, incapable of being strong enough to, quote, set things right, unquote. And in turn, it tends to propel people in the direction of wanting a strong man, of wanting someone out there who can just, someone who could just set this thing straight. You know, we need greater police powers, we need fewer guns around, and I've noted the CIA connection to the gun control movement in the past. I would refer people to a miscellaneous archive show entitled Purdy's Last Stand, an analysis of the Stockton schoolyard shootings. I'll touch on the CIA connection to the gun control movement later, and I view that against the background of the martial law contingency plans and America's ongoing economic disintegration, which ultimately, in my opinion, will force the implementation of a completely totalitarian form of government in this country, albeit one perhaps which will be continue to be trapped in the vestments of democracy. But I view the situation in Waco, Texas, basically as Jonestown, too, and there have been many comparisons between the Branch Davidians and Jonestown, and indeed there are quite a few similarities between what Jim Jones did and what Mr. David Koresh is doing down in, or has done, in Waco and elsewhere. And again, I think there may very well be a connection between the two, and one of the possibilities I hold open, and again, this is food for thought and grounds for further research, not a statement I'm making, but a question I'm asking. I wonder whether perhaps the Branch Davidians might be another of the intelligence-connected cults like Jonestown or the Moonies. We've also seen connections between such cults as the cult in Brownsville, Texas, the Matamoros cult, which killed a number of people, and the elements of the intelligence community. One of the people involved with the organized crime network was that was getting the drugs from that particular group, headed up, by the way, by a Cuban American, and the Cuban-American community has strong connections to the intelligence community, and in particular they have strong connections to the anti-Castro milieu, and in turn to the Contra network. I would note that a fellow named Rick Block, whose name was on the list of pilots flying Contra support missions out of Ilopango Air Base, he was involved with the organized crime group that was in turn involved with the Matamoros drug cult. Not that the drug cult itself was necessarily an intelligence front, but it obviously did have some connections to the intelligence community. I have similar questions about the cult in Waco, Texas. Reading from the San Francisco Sunday Examiner and Chronicle from March 7th of 1993, this is an article by Lee Hancock of the Dallas Morning News. The same story was carried in many other papers as well. It's headlined, Religious Cult Sent Out Many Ominous Clues. Subheaded, Officials Knew of Assault Weapons, Plans for Bombs, and Suicide Warnings. Skipping down in the article, last April, according to federal officials, the U.S. consulate in Australia cabled information warning that the cult was contemplating mass suicide and intended to kill any authorities who intruded on its property. McLennan County Sheriff's deputies and other law enforcement officials forwarded an intelligence report suggesting that the group was conducting military exercises and collecting a massive arsenal by mail. From the sheriff, said the ATF official, authorities learned that a United Parcel Service delivery man had begun reporting potential problems from the cult after a box he was delivering to the cult broke open and disgorged dozens of fragment grenade casings. By monitoring shipments to the 77-acre Davidian compound, federal agents learned of even more disturbing acquisitions. A huge array of chemicals, gunpowder, and other propellants commonly used in making homemade explosives, grenades, and bombs. Quote, we identified persons with knowledge that would enable them to build bombs and explosives, unquote, who were members or were assisting the cult, the source said. That last paragraph again, quote, we identified persons with knowledge that would enable them to build bombs and explosives, unquote, who were members or were assisting the cult, the source said. There I go again. Cult members also were amassing instruction books detailing how to convert arms to automatic weapons, how to build bombs, and other military information, the source said. Note the international connections of this particular cult. It's interesting to find a warning coming from the U.S. consulate in Australia about this particular group. Note the arms. Note also that there's a considerable amount of money associated with this group. Now, one cannot draw a definite conclusion from that, yet at the same time, a serious student of the intelligence community must ask the question about whether or not this group may in fact be being used in some capacity by the intelligence community, much as Jonestown was used and much as the Moonies, and a better documented example, have been used in the past. I haven't got time to go into the discussion about Jonestown. I refer to listeners to Radio Free America program numbers 6 and 7. Also a miscellaneous archive show dealing with Jonestown and the Moscone milk killings. And again, there are some similarities between what we're seeing at Jonestown and what we saw with the People's Temple, I should say, and what we're seeing in Waco, Texas. Some of the methods of isolating men and women, for example, the extreme punishment. There are a number of superficial similarities, and there may be more than superficial. The sexual habits of David Koresh, a.k.a. Vernon Howell, and Jim Jones are quite similar in some ways, the group is also reminiscent in some ways, of the Manson family cult, and that also may very well have been connected to the intelligence community. Recall in a miscellaneous archive show entitled The Ultimate Evil, Satanism, Mind Control, and the U.S. National Security Establishment, as well as Radio Free America number 12, we talked about some of the neo-Nazi and probable intelligence connections to the Manson operation. And there are some similarities between the Branch Davidians and the People's Temple, as well as the Manson group, and I suspect that there may very well be an intelligence connection to this operation. The key will revolve, the key to that, whether or not there are intelligence connections, will revolve around the money. How was this group funded? Where do they get the resources that they have? Because those resources are considerable. And I note the situation in Texas, and as I have been examining in the course of Radio Free America 38 and other archive shows, the martial law contingency plans and what I view as a distinct, albeit gradual, drift toward martial law in this country, bringing the military and the intelligence community into law enforcement to fight the drug menace that the military and intelligence community to a considerable extent have helped to create. The reduction of civil liberties, the frightening rulings being handed down by the Reagan and Bush judiciary, both the Supreme Court and appellate courts, as well as the overt martial law contingency plans that emerged into the public view during the Iran-Contra scandal, all of these things are to be viewed with great alarm. And as we view first in Bradley fighting vehicles being unloaded to combat this particular cult, and later, after David Koresh made another statement, we're actually seeing M1 tanks, the Army's state-of-the-art battle tank, being used not in the Persian Gulf, but at least potentially right here at home. Reading from the San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, March 9th of 1993, this is a story by Mary Jordan, and Sue Ann Presley of the Washington Post, headlined Waco, Texas, headlined Cult Leader Boasts He's Ready, Quote, Ready for War, Unquote. It reads in part as follows. Cult leader David Koresh is telling federal agents that he wants, quote, the government to engage in an all-out firefight, unquote, at his fortified compound so he can die a martyr, an FBI spokesman said yesterday. Officials trying to negotiate over the 90 adults and 17 children inside with Koresh have played down the, quote, negative part of his personality, unquote, during the nine-day standoff, Special Agent Bob Ricks said. But now, he added, these officials believe that, quote, it's important for the American public to know what we are dealing with, unquote. To provoke authorities, Ricks said machine guns have been aimed at agents through portholes in the compound, and Koresh has boasted that he has the firepower to blast armored Bradley fighting vehicles, quote, 40 to 50 feet in the air, unquote. Ricks said Koresh may have assembled rockets or other explosive devices. Federal agents said Koresh may have obtained armor-piercing missiles. Because of increasing concern that Koresh does have explosives, FBI officials said, Defense Secretary Les Aspin approved use of M1 Abrams tanks. The M1 is the Army's state-of-the-art battle vehicle. It is more heavily armored than the Bradley fighting vehicle and was used with considerable success in the Persian Gulf War. When the situation in Waco first broke, I noted the footage that was being aired on broadcast reports and the still photographs of Bradley fighting vehicles being unloaded to potentially deal with the situation in Waco. And I basically noted that, when they're unloading armored vehicles for domestic law enforcement purposes, you are moving in the direction of martial law. And we have seen something of an escalation. Now we're seeing M1 tanks. I have no idea just what kind of firepower David Koresh has access to. It'll be interesting to note, to find out just what it is that he does have and where he got it. But again, as I note the situation that I have long viewed as creeping martial law, take a look at what you're seeing down in Waco, Texas, folks. When they're unloading M1 Abrams tanks, you're looking at the implementation of martial law. And I wonder to what extent the situation in Waco may have been provoked in order to, at one level, to get the public used to seeing troops and military vehicles being used in domestic law enforcement. And I also wonder to what extent the situation there may also have been precipitated to make Bill Clinton look bad. Again, having things like this occurring in the country are disturbing, and ultimately it tends to create a sense of unease on people's part vis-a-vis the leadership and the government. Ultimately, if things like this become a pattern, we are going to see calls for a strong man or for a stronger government, someone that can basically kick a little you-know-what, and as opposed to a quote wimp unquote like Bill Clinton. And recall that Jimmy Carter was portrayed as a wimp for not being able to handle the hostage situation. And we're already seeing in the American media, we're seeing Bill Clinton being compared with Jimmy Carter. I would also note that Jonestown happened on Jimmy Carter's watch as well. These events might not be viewed as being political events by the average observer, but in fact they are profoundly political. They create a sense of unease on the part of the general public, much like some of the serial killings that are going around, and I suspect that at least some of those, notably the Stockton schoolyard killings, things like that, and the Manson family depredations, are in fact a very sophisticated form of terrorism, basically a refinement of the strategy of tension that was utilized in Italy by the fascist elements there, supported by CIA, because it basically, it not only alarms the public, it makes people fearful, and it makes people far more accepting of greater police state tactics, of reduced civil liberties, broader surveillance powers, and also, I would note again, the apparent CIA connection to the gun control movement, something that I talked about in the Miscellaneous Archives show about the Stockton schoolyard killings, was that a quote, ex-unquote CIA agent named William O. Wells founded one of the leading handgun control organizations and greatly assisted in the founding of the other, and he was liberally aided in his efforts by none other than William Colby, former director of the CIA. One of the things that I have noted is that the push now for eliminating assault rifles is not something which goes to the heart of the whole issue of firearms and murder. Most murders, at least as of 5 years ago, were not committed by firearms at all, but rather by knives, which is the most common weapon. Most murders are crimes of passion, and the most ubiquitous weapon is a knife. Every household has knives, and I don't know whether this is true now, because I'm not up to date on my crime stats, so to speak, but as of 5 years ago, most murders were committed with knives, and murders committed with firearms, the majority of them, are the most common firearm used in homicides is the .22. That's the most common caliber of weapon, and as a result, again, most murders are crimes of passion. Somebody gets drunk or catches their spouse in bed with somebody else, and they fly off the handle and commit something that a crime they later regret. Most firearms committed, firearms-related homicides are committed with .22s, yet we're not seeing a push for the elimination of .22s. The percentage of murders which take place as a result of using assault rifles is very, very, very small. However, assault rifles, and I, by the way, I'm not advocating that people go out and purchase an automatic weapon or even an assault rifle, but the potential threat of a weapon of that type is that it does put the citizenry on a more even footing with the militia, basically with the military and or SWAT teams. And in the event of the implementation of martial law, the access not only to firearms, but powerful firearms, such as semi-automatic rifles, so-called assault rifles. An assault rifle is actually a fully automatic weapon, but access to those would be something which would enable a population to resist, to a certain extent, the implementation of martial law. And again, at some point, whether in 6 months, 5 years, or 50 years, this country is going to find itself under martial law, barring some serious reversal, barring a serious reversal of the current trend. And I note, again, William O. Wells, who, by the way, himself owns two handguns and a Sharps Borchardt rifle, which makes it interesting that he is so adamant that handguns be, that the public not have access to handguns. Note, again, the apparent CIA connection to the gun control movement, and note, again, that the concept of a, quote, ex-unquote CIA agent is a very dubious one. One of the things that's certain to come out of the situation in Texas is a call for greater restriction on the public's access to firearms. One of the things that made me suspicious about the Stockton schoolyard incident aside from the connections of Patrick Edward Purdy to the Moonies, to the Aryan Nations, his seeming ability to travel around the country with no resources at all, and the apparent laxity of law enforcement. Some 42 different law enforcement agencies had files on this guy, and he wasn't very old. But I noted that immediately after that incident, and there were a number of shoot-ups at schools, not kids taking guns to school, but some lone nut walking in and shooting up a bunch of school children, I noted that immediately after the Stockton schoolyard incident, the first gun control legislation was introduced here in California, and it spurred calls for gun control elsewhere. If more people are killed by automobiles each year than by firearms. An automobile, just like a firearm, is a tool which can be either used properly or abused. Had Patrick Edward Purdy driven a pickup truck onto the Cleveland Elementary School grounds and killed those children by running them over, I will guarantee you there would not have been a widespread call for restricting the public's access to motor vehicles. There was a widespread public call, to restrict the public's access to firearms. It's one of the things that made me suspicious, and I remain very suspicious of the Stockton schoolyard incident. And I suspect that we will be seeing similar calls for gun control following in the wake of the wacko from Waco. And again, I'm not advocating that people go out and arm themselves to the teeth or purchase machine guns or anything like that. However, I do think the responsible acquisition and use of a firearm is a good idea in general, and I think it would be a very good thing for people to do facing what I'm afraid we're going to be facing in this country. Again, there are a firearm, like a motor vehicle, can be used or abused, and I would advocate that as many people as reasonably can learn to use a weapon and acquire a weapon, because it is something that I'm afraid is going to come in handy in the future. When, I can't say. Maybe in 5 years, maybe in 6 months, maybe not for 50 or 75 years, but again, I view all of these things against the background of America's economic disintegration, and for America, the future is written, and it is going to prove bleak. We are going down the same road that Argentina went down, and ultimately, I think we are going to find ourselves in the same situation. And as the economic deprivation in Argentina grew and the consequent social dislocation grew, ultimately that situation led to the so-called Dirty War. It led basically to a series of fascist juntas in Argentina and a murderous program that the military conducted against the civilian population. We had the so-called Desaparecidos and a truly horrific situation in Argentina as an increasingly large section of the Argentinian public refused to go along with the program, so to speak. And again, the situation in Waco is also, I think, going to lead to a heavier hand here at home. And if people think that some of this is a little bit off the wall, when I'm talking about martial law here in the United States, take a look at what you're seeing down there. When they're using M1 tanks, Abrams tanks, for domestic law enforcement purposes, folks, that is martial law, and that's what we're seeing down there. There was an odd echo perhaps no pun intended, in Waco of something that we saw down in Panama in 1989. After the U.S. invaded Panama and General Noriega holed up in the Vatican Embassy to Panama, one of the tactics used by the United States was blasting loud rock music at Noriega as a psychological warfare tool. We're seeing an interesting echo of that now down in Waco as well. Reading from the Chronicle of Monday, March 8th of 1993, a story by Mary Jordan and Sue Ann Presley, again, also of the Washington Post. This is Dateline Waco, Texas, headlined, "Cult Tries to Unnerve Agents by Playing Loud Rock Music." First paragraph, "On the eighth day of his standoff against police, cult leader David Koresh rejected a settlement offer from federal authorities and turned to, quote, psychological warfare, unquote, by blasting his own rock music at the hundreds of armed agents surrounding his compound." Well, I've noted that no longer are the car bombs just going off in Beirut, Lebanon. Now they're going off in New York City. No longer are the Bradley fighting vehicles and Abrams tanks being utilized in the Persian Gulf. Now they're being utilized in Texas. No longer are we seeing the rock music being blasted as a psychological warfare tool. We're not seeing that in Panama anymore. Now we're seeing that down in Texas, an odd, not necessarily significant by any means, but an odd echo of what we saw in Panama. In the 1960s, you used to hear the call on parts of the, certain elements of the anti-war movement, the less responsible elements, to, quote, bring the war home. And I used to listen to these idiots talking about that and thinking to myself, oh, boy, they better hope that the war doesn't ever come home because it isn't going to be much fun. Well, some 20-odd years later, it looks like the war has indeed come home. And I've once again reiterate that everything I've learned in 20 years of political research could be summed up by the old street adage that what goes around comes around, and what's been going around in places like Beirut, Iraq, Kuwait, and Panama is now coming around places a whole lot closer to home. And just as I noted, there are some curious aspects of the authorities' handling of the situation in New York City. New York law enforcement officials have been outraged at the leaks by the federal authorities. I wonder why those leaks have been made. They have apparently compromised the investigation. I wonder whether perhaps the investigation into the World Trade Center bombing is being deliberately compromised, perhaps, and this is only a possibility, perhaps to allow some of the real perpetrators to escape the spotlight so that we could see who they are. Because, again, I suspect that the incident in New York may very well be a provocation. At the same time, there are some curious aspects to the handling of the situation in Waco as well. Reading now from the Chronicle of Wednesday, March 3rd of 1993, an article by Steve Barnes of Reuters, datelined Waco, Texas, headlined, Wounded Agents Recall the Ambush, subheaded, Cult Gunfire Came, quote, Even Through the Walls, unquote. Quote, It was a nightmare, just a nightmare, unquote. Bill Buford, 46, a special agent of the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, struggled against the morphine dripping into his arm to recall details of the Sunday morning gun battle with religious cultists that killed four of his fellow agents and wounded 16 others. Quote, It was an ambush, unquote, he said of the fearsome reception he and his fellow agents encountered. We feel the cult was tipped off. They knew when we were coming. Our 9mm just weren't any match for their assault rifles and machine guns, unquote. Undercover agents had infiltrated the group months ago. Shortly before the raid, a bureau spokesman said, an agent from within the compound sent a signal that it would be safe to stage the raid. According to the bureau, all the agents got out of the compound safely. Officials in Washington theorized yesterday that the undercover agents had somehow been set up by the cult, or that the cult's leaders had found out about the raid, even as the undercover agent was signaling the agents to proceed. And again, I wonder whether perhaps this was a setup. We don't have anywhere near enough information to say that authoritatively, but at the same time, I think the situation demands that the question be asked, and I wonder whether perhaps this situation was deliberately precipitated and that perhaps some of the undercover agents were in fact double agents. It'll be interesting to see whether an intelligence connection to this particular cult emerges. Now, I would note that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is obviously the central agency involved in the situation in Waco. They are also deeply involved in the investigation into the World Trade Center bombing in New York City. I would recall also, for the benefit of listeners, that the bomb in the World Trade Center went off in an area that was utilized by the Secret Service for a motor pool. Went off in the middle of a bunch of Secret Service vehicles in the basement of the World Trade Center. Well, the Secret Service and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms are part of the Treasury Department. They are under the stewardship of Lloyd Benson. Now, one of the reasons why I replayed the Miscellaneous Archive show recorded on September 25th, 1988, about Lloyd Benson and his connections to the Defense Industrial Security Command and the assassination and the milieu involved in the assassinations of the Kennedys, Martin Luther King, and others, is that we now have Lloyd Benson as the Secretary of the Treasury, the Secret Service, which protects the President, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which we're seeing in a big way in Waco, Texas, and in the World Trade Center bombing. They are under Lloyd Benson's stewardship, and with his past, I think that is a very, very disturbing situation. One of the things that needs to be investigated, one of the focal points of investigation, should be Lloyd Benson, his past connections to the Defense Industrial Security Command, and his connections to some of the elements, not necessarily that Lloyd Benson himself was involved, I don't want to be misunderstood on that score, although for all I know he may have been, but certainly Lloyd Benson himself has very strong connections to the national security establishment, to the defense and intelligence milieu, and beyond that, to those elements of the national security establishment that were directly involved in the assassinations of major American political leaders. I would also note that there is a technique that is used in law enforcement and the intelligence community, and that technique is called getting a leash on someone. If you have compromising information, either of a criminal nature or simply something which could do damage to somebody, that can be utilized to prevail upon the individual to perform a favor. I also note in this context that at this point in time, Benson's son, is under investigation by the Resolution Trust Corporation in connection with a savings and loan scandal. And I wonder, one of the questions, one of the many, many questions that I have in connection with this, is whether perhaps Lloyd Benson is being pressured in this regard, whether perhaps he might be being pressured either, perhaps not necessarily to do anything proactive, but simply to turn the other way and not be as effective as he might be in his administration of ATF and Secret Service. But with Lloyd Benson's track record, and in the Hudson Valley Chronicle article by David Wemple from 1977 that I accessed in the Miscellaneous Archive show about Lloyd Benson, it was alleged that Lloyd Benson was in fact directly connected to the gold and drug smuggling ring that was utilized by U.S. intelligence. Well, actually, this gold and drug smuggling ring was run by the intelligence community, and that ring was used at the operational level in the assassination of Martin Luther King. And in the unimpeached Robert Byron Watson affidavit, it was maintained that Lloyd Benson was part of that operation. And as we view the ATF circling Waco, Texas, and we watch them in the New York the World Trade Center bombing, and as we note whether or not it's significant, as we note that the bomb went off in a part of the World Trade Center utilized by the Secret Service, bear in mind that the Secret Service and ATF are run by the Department of the Treasury, and that is being presided over by Lloyd Benson at this point in time, and that individual is directly connected to the most insidious elements of our national security establishment. By way of concluding the program this evening, by way of concluding the broadcast this evening, I'd like to read some observations on the bungled, if in fact it was bungling and not a deliberately compromised, raid on the cult in Waco. In the New York Times of Wednesday, March 3rd of 1993, there's an interesting bit of editorial comment by a person who we have dealt with in the past. This particular New York Times story is by Don Terry, T-E-R-R-Y. It's datelined Waco, Texas, March 2nd, and headlined, Standoff in Texas Goes On After Cult Chiefs Broadcast. Skipping down in the article, we find, the raid drew harsh criticism from the Austin home of Colonel Charlie Beckwith, retired, the founding commander of the Army's Delta Force. Colonel Beckwith called the raid, quote, a disgrace, unquote, and said he called on the White House for an investigation, quote, it's crazy to shoot people like this, he said in a telephone interview, quote, I'm just embarrassed that we live in a society where our government allows something like this to happen, unquote. I'm going to reiterate this quote by Colonel Charlie Beckwith, who, bear in mind, was the leader of the Desert One rescue mission, which, had it been successful, might have saved Jimmy Carter's political fortunes. There are substantive indications, and I refer people to Radio Free America 31, that raid was deliberately sabotaged from within. Whether or not that was the case, certainly among the participants in that raid were Richard Secord and Colonel John Dutton, both of whom later emerged as key players in the Contra support effort in the Iran-Contra scandal, individuals whose loyalties under the circumstances have to be viewed as divided. Because in many ways, when I talk about the World Trade Center bombing and the situation in Waco as working against Bill Clinton, and in effect, whether or not they were intended that way, in effect, working to destabilize Bill Clinton's administration, this could be viewed as the thesis statement of everything I'm driving at. Again, quoting Colonel Charlie Beckwith, quote, it's crazy to shoot people like this, unquote, he said in a telephone interview. I'm just embarrassed that we live in a society where our government allows something like this to happen, unquote. Colonel Beckwith, who lectures frequently on combating terrorism, criticized the planning of the raid, particularly the apparent lack of medical evacuation equipment. The authorities spent today preparing for battle. By 11:30 a.m., federal agents told both major hospitals to be ready for an unspecified number of injured. "We don't know how many," said Lisa Coggins, a spokeswoman for Providence Health Center. That's C-O-G-G-I-N-G-S. And the caption to a photograph right beside that section of this article shows a couple of people from Waco, Texas, watching the siege of the Branch Davidian compound. Quote, "This shouldn't be happening in America," unquote, said Debbie High, H-I-G-H. Again, quoting, "This kind of thing you expect overseas," unquote. Again, because this, I'm going to reiterate this, because this goes to the, this again, like the quote from Colonel Charlie Beckwith, could be viewed as a thesis statement for everything I'm talking about in my hypothetical analysis of some of these events. Not that it's hypothetically an analysis, but obviously the things that I'm talking about are not definite at this point, but I suspect that my analysis is right on the money and that this food for thought and grounds for further research ultimately will be borne out with adequate investigation. Again, the thesis statement of what I'm talking about in particular insofar as the effect that things like the World Trade Center bombing and the situation in Waco have on the American public, and the way in which this reflects poorly on Bill Clinton. Again, quoting this woman, Debbie High or Debbie Higg, I'm not sure how her name is pronounced, Debbie H-I-G-H. Quote, "This shouldn't be happening in America," said Debbie High. Quote, "This kind of thing you expect overseas," unquote. Yes, indeed, but as I said, no longer are we seeing the rock music being blasted for psychological warfare purposes in Panama. Now it's going on in Texas. No longer are we seeing the Bradley fighting vehicles and the Abrams battle tanks being used in Kuwait and Iraq. Now we're seeing them in Texas. And no longer are the car bombs going off in Beirut, Lebanon. Now they're going off in New York City. What goes around comes around, and this shouldn't be happening in America, I agree, but it is happening in America, and I'm afraid it may be continuing to happen in America, and I suspect that it is not happenstance, not an accident, and that unfortunately elements of our own national security establishment are at least complicit, if not directly precipitating these things, and I suspect that the warning I sounded on November 8th, the first broadcast that I did after Bill Clinton was elected, I sounded the warning that the forces which assassinated John and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King and so many others, the forces which have overthrown innumerable governments abroad, the forces which successfully destabilized Jimmy Carter, those forces are in place today, and barring a drastic change, they may very well destabilize Bill Clinton. I suspect that just exactly that type of destabilization is underway now, and I suspect that the World Trade Center bombing and the situation in Waco are part of it, and it will be very interesting to see how much of this sort of thing goes on in the future, and whether we see eventually creeping martial law in the United States. Actually, I think we're seeing it now, but it'll be interesting to see just what the American people, how the American people respond to this, and how much they are willing to sit still for. And that's all we have time for this evening. And we will come back to this next week. Not an analysis of Waco and the World Trade Center bombing. I will be updating these stories. But we're going to be taking a look, again, as we continue with Radio Free America 38, we're going to be taking a look at the national security infrastructures that grew out of the recommendations coming out of the Vice President's Task Force on Counterterrorism, or on Terrorism and Combating Terrorism. Again, that Vice President, former CIA Director George Bush. And we're going to be taking a look in particular at the martial law contingency plans that are on the books today and how they grew out of the recommendations stemming from the Task Force on Terrorism. And we're going to take a look at some very, very disturbing indications that the disturbances in Los Angeles last year may very well have represented, at least to a certain extent, an actualization of some of those martial law contingency plans. That's all we have time for this evening. That concludes the prepared portion of this broadcast. Now, all of our archive broadcast shows are on permanent file with the Tape Duplication Company. The name of that company is Archives on Audio. That's Archives on Audio. They're located at P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117. The phone number is area code 415-346-1840. 415-346-1840. I should also mention that neither myself nor this station makes any money off of this announcement. This is FYI. This is Dave Emery thanking all the listeners for their contributions and encouraging them to tune in again to the next broadcast. Until then, take care.